got the change for a nickel. I don't have no bounce left in my shoes. Don't have no fancy for you to tickle. I ain't got nothing but the blues. Ain't got no coffee that is a working. Don't have no feelings to brew. I don't have a dream that is working. I ain't got nothing but the swinging, the folks are singing. I just can't get up off the ground.
Oh, that's the legendary, multi-award-winning recording artist, actor, songwriter, and bluesman Lou Rawls with "I Ain't Got Nothing But the Blues." Sounds familiar, doesn't it? And it feels familiar, too. It's from his 1993 album, Portrait of the Blues. Lou Rawls was also known for his philanthropic work, most notably for starting and annually hosting the United Negro College Fund Telethon that raised hundreds of millions of dollars in support of education for black college students and for historically black colleges and universities. He died on January the 6th, 2006, at the age of 72. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and what a reaction to yesterday's program. I got so much mail. I thank you for it. People saying, well, it was a kind of eye-opener, the idea that while these primaries are being focused on, we are not hearing about what the real purpose of these primaries are, but we are encouraged to believe that this is democracy in action. No, it is not democracy in action at all. The race on both sides, the duopoly, what they're having is a kind of weeding out process to determine who the standard bearer will be in November. And they conduct primaries or caucuses in order to get or to gauge the popular vote, the popular reaction to any of the candidates running. But the real determination comes in the nomination process, and that rests strictly on the strength of the delegates to the party's respective conventions. The Republican system, the Republican Party's system, is kind of straightforward. A candidate wins a state. The delegates, or that's the party's representatives of that state, essentially go to the candidate who wins, a winner-takes-all approach. But the Democratic Party is quite undemocratic. As I said yesterday, they have a Gordian knot specifically designed to hedge the bets in favor of the party establishment. And they have a system which they have honored, and this is not cloaked in any secrecy. Their system assures that there's a way to nullify the public and the popular vote. So that, as I said yesterday, even though a candidate like Bernie Sanders is actually winning, his opponent, Hillary Clinton, is actually winning. Because he is not getting his share, his fair share of delegates, because the Democratic Party has a very interesting system. They have the regular delegates, and then they have a group called unpledged delegates, and that's a nice way of saying superdelegates. These are people who have the wherewithal to go wherever they please. They don't have to abide by the wishes of the people, and they don't have to go along with the regular delegates, who would generally take the position that whoever the more popular or most popular candidate is, that's the candidate who gets the vote. These are the party establishment. These are people who are the insiders, the in-crowd, I hate to use the analogy here, these are the one percenters. And they've anointed themselves the arbitrary and capricious privilege of basically countering the popular intention through the vote. Now, this is why Hillary Clinton, going into the next primary in Nevada and in the primary in South Carolina, is sitting quite pretty. Because with only these two primaries behind them in Iowa and New Hampshire, guess what? Hillary Clinton is said to have already in her pocket 359 delegates, and Sanders has only 8. You see how that works? She didn't win in New Hampshire, and technically she lost in Iowa, but she has a huge number of delegates, that's party establishment types, who have already pledged their troth to her. And who, because there are 712 of them, and 2,382 delegates are needed to win the nomination, if at this early stage of the campaign she's already armed with a substantial number, and she is poised to take them all, the party establishment is more than likely going to go along with her to undermine and nullify all of the votes that Bernie Sanders is getting. Now, it doesn't matter whether you're Bernie fan or Hillary fan. The idea is we're talking supposedly about a democratic process. The man won New Hampshire fair and square by 22 percentage points. He trounced her. And yet she has more delegates than he does. And you're not hearing from the fair-minded Hillary Clinton, the person who talks about privilege and so forth. She is not above taking advantage of such privileges of the 1%. A liberal journalist, Russ Belville, was writing the other day in his blog that for every, let me quote it here, one vote from the one percenters for the Wall Street candidate, that's Hillary Clinton, is worth 10,105 votes from the 99 percenters for the Democratic Socialist candidate. This is a problem. You see what I mean? And this is engineered, and it is given the blessing of legality. And basic, you know, this is how the Democratic Party is operating. Now, here's what's really annoying to me. Hillary Clinton has no problem taking advantage of that. Although she eschews the idea of privilege, you see, she's a person of the people. But she doesn't mind unfair competition. In fact, it's a Clinton trait. why do things on the up and up when you can, you know, you can do things underhandedly and get by and win. Anything to win. The issue here, too, is when you're talking about the Democratic Party, you're talking, and everybody knows it, she's described the black vote as her firewall. Imagine a person talking this way. This is my firewall. Black folks. And the party, she was sitting with a bunch of party delegates who are going to function in the capacity of super delegates soon in July when the party has its convention in Philadelphia. All these preachers and, you know, congressmen and mayors and other elected officials standing up and pledging their troth. People need to understand what that means. They're saying, we are nullifying. If the black community were to vote in any way other than we want, we have the power to nullify the vote. And all voters voting Democratic this year. This is, to me, a huge issue. There should be lawsuits flying all over the place, especially since the black vote is such a sacrosanct notion, and there's so much history attached to it, and so much blood and sacrifice and dying and killing and murder and assassination associated with it. Hillary Clinton has no problem with the idea that she has a secret weapon, and the secret weapon is her superdelegates. She has more than half of the 712 superdelegates in her pocket already. And we're calling this fair, and this is democracy, and this is the, do I say it, the Democratic Party. And people are not worried about this. This is election fraud. This is an assault on the basic constitutional right. Then if this is the process, all right, your vote doesn't count, essentially is the argument here, then why not tell the people this is how it's running? This is how this is going. You're not really electing me. You're electing the toadies who will be under my control and who could undermine your vote. If you say A and they say B, it's going to be B. It's a cruel joke. But to my mind, it is also illegal, or it should be. There should be no question about this. And here, the reason I'm talking about the Democratic Party is the Republican Party isn't playing this game. They're playing other games, but this isn't one of them. The Republican Party at least says, look, the delegates go to whoever wins the state. The popular vote is honored. The Democrats are saying, no, no, it ain't necessarily so. We have ways of determining the power of your vote and the legitimacy even of your vote. We could nullify your vote if we wish to. Seems to me we should have a torrent of legal actions against the Democratic Party, and we should have a groundswell of reaction at the street level about this. Why would one superdelegate's vote have the equivalent value of 10,105 votes from the 99 percenters. And you call that fair. And you're standing up in front of people talking about you believe in democracy and all this kind of nonsense. And you know, you marched with you marched with Martin Luther King, and how you love, some of your best friends are black people. And the people who themselves are part of this process, the African Americans and Latino representatives who are part of this process, ought to be ashamed of themselves. That this party is enabled into committing voter fraud. And we ought to be real clear about that. And this is why I maintain this is precisely the time to send a message. This party has misbehaving for years, for decades, for centuries, if you want to get really serious about it. And this is what they're doing. And the great liberal, the great feminist, standing up there preaching yesterday. I watched this thing, it was bilious. She is talking to America about her strong convictions against racism. And I'm saying, my Lord, Is there no one in the community who could just go and shake these people up a little bit and say, listen, for the sake of pride, if you don't have sense, if you have already lost your common sense, could you at least hold on to a little bit of your pride and not serve as a backdrop for this very vile, uncaring woman, this inveterate liar? Could you not do that and drag everybody into it by extension, that because you think she's the greatest thing since sliced bread, so should we, or so do we? No. Hillary Clinton should never be welcomed in any black community. Not unless you've suffered severe brain damage and you've lost your memory and you've lost your dignity and you've lost any contact with history, and you've lost your pride, and you've lost your common sense, and you've lost a historical record of what the Clintons have been doing. You stand up there to defend this woman and surround her and give her a sense of safety, political safety and salvation. You let her even come into your church. You're just so bereft of values yourself. That should never happen. And now, although you have the ambassadors that she's sending out now to your communities, Jesse Jackson, and I'm going to come to him in a minute, Jesse Jackson is saying his role is not really endorsing anybody. Well, clearly he's endorsing Hillary. But his role is to get out the vote, which is orders from Hillary. You go out there and you mobilize your people to vote for me. And if they don't vote for me, as it turns out, I still have my superdelegates. If they vote for Sanders, I still have a way of nullifying their vote. Now, I just want to repeat this because I said it and it was so important to latch on to. And that is the significance of South Carolina. I told you this months ago. South Carolina. Because here is where we ought to revisit political history. History in general, but political history. Jesse Jackson comes from the region. He's a son of the soil, you could say. And The Rainbow Coalition took formation there. And the idea coalesced all these disparate groups that did not have a history of working together. African Americans, Latinos, the labor groups, gays, immigrants, union folk. You had all kinds of people merging together for a common purpose, which was to oppose the establishment, including the establishment Democratic Party. This was the party that refused to seat Fannie Lou Hamer. Refused to do that. This was the party that refused to give the elastic that Shirley Chisholm needed to conduct a credible and formidable campaign for president as an African or Afro-Caribbean woman. This is the same party. And here we had the beginnings of a movement. And wasted, hijacked by the same forces standing up today telling you that the best candidate is Hillary Clinton. And what exactly can they point to that Hillary Clinton has done with all of the opportunities that she had to deliver for the people she now calls her firewall? Nothing except misery. Her husband, you may recall, in order to prove how tough he was on crime, took time out of his campaign to go execute a black man who everybody agreed was mentally challenged. Welfare reform, that's a Clinton tag that should hang around her neck. Healthcare reform that she never did get done. And when she did get it done, it was written by the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies and so forth. Those were the people in the room. None of the superdelegates were there. They were not invited to the table. All these trips around the world creating havoc in countries of color. The assassination of Muammar Gaddafi. That's Hillary. The outrageous chaos visited upon Haiti. That is Hillary. And we could go on a long list of things that prove one thing to me, and that is she is not qualified for this job. She got this job as a gift. She got her jobs as a senator from New York. She was never a resident of New York until she decided that's what I want. And in the aftermath of her situation with Bill and his peccadilloes, the gift was, hey, we'll give you your first elected present for being such a silent and supportive and submissive wife. We're going to reward you with a U.S. Senate seat. She starts at the top. Has no problems taking advantage of white skin privilege at all, or of her feminine privilege, none at all. The path was cleared. And who brought her into the U.S. Senate? The same silly black people in Congress. went all out to make sure that the black community and Latinos particularly voted for Hillary Clinton. She was the greatest thing since sliced bread. And so she walks out of the White House and into the U.S. Senate. And in short order, she jams up Barack Obama, a guy she vilified. She called that man everything but a child of God, caused him even to reject his own pastor. She did all that damage. She cut him up. She came at him with a straight razor, just sliced him to smithereens. Had no problems with that. But today, guess what? It is arranged so that even he is part of the problem. He has actually endorsed her, and he has actually given his blessing to a person who has no reason to even aspire to be president of the United States. But she can only because she's absolutely sure that the minions will do as instructed. And they're doing the job. Isn't it odd that now all these meetings are occurring with Hillary Clinton? Sharpton is sitting down, and Marc Morial of the National Urban League. What did I tell you? I told you when we had these speeches, I play these speeches and we comment on them and tell you way in advance how this is going to work. Nobody's demanding Hillary Clinton do anything. Nobody's walking out of these meetings with a list of concessions. Nobody's able to report exactly what she's going to do. Except yesterday we hear, well, she's going to put a couple of billions of dollars for food programs and whatnot. Okay. That's a good thing to say. I mean, they are, after all, your firewall. You got to say something. But she's preaching the evils of racism in Harlem, where it isn't. Racism is not in Harlem. She's not venturing into the white community to preach racism, which is where the problem is. Well, after all, she's living in an all-white segregated community. Now. But I think we're pretty clear. Racism is not the problem in Harlem. But you need the good colored folks to provide a backdrop. Harlem is convenient. And besides, many of your clones are there. Many of your sycophants are there. Charlie Rangel and Al Sharpton and other people who really have a very diminished role in their own constituencies. Charlie Rangel, the senior legislator from New York in Congress, 40 years and counting, has seen his community diminish and dwindle to practically nothing. In fact, he is now called the congressman from the Upper West Side. Harlem no longer exists. The Harlem that Adam Clayton Powell passed on to him no longer exists on his watch. But he's telling us what a great thing it would be to have Hillary Clinton as president. I'm saying it would have been a great thing to have had Adam Clayton Powell II or somebody named Powell as congressman. This is what the dilemma is here. The Democratic Party has come to the point of uselessness. And in fact, it's become vampiric. It is literally sucking the blood, the life blood, out of the people that sustain its existence, only so that it continues to marginalize them, exploit them, ignore them, and create policies that are harmful to them and to their people in the diaspora. And that is why I ask you today, what is to be done? The famous question. Is this something that we could tolerate? I mean, even Bernie Sanders isn't grieving about it publicly. He, too, is playing a kind of game here. I suppose he is locked in the situation and it's about political survival. But the fact is, we do not have any popular uprising except from groups that are taking this on. And they're trying to organize and they're trying to let it be known that this is not to stand. We have one petition from MoveOn.org that has already gained in excess of 120,000 signatures. We have Ready to Fight and Progressive Kick and Women for Bernie. And they're doing something. Well, that's one thing having to do with the immediate situation of the election at hand. I'm asking, in the long term, how do we reconfigure our political orientation? Do we still go with this ridiculous system or not? Are we clear that it has served its time and it needs to go? Or if it doesn't need to go, we do. We need to go from it. Enough of the talk. What is going to be the action? Not just for this election cycle. What is going to be the situation beyond now? How do we configure ourselves or reconfigure ourselves so that we're not insulted all the time? Or that our political involvement actually means something and yields something? That we could point to and say, well, we have done our job to advance the cause of justice for all, equality for all, freedom for all. I'd like to hear what you think. 888-874-4888, right after this short break from Lou Rawls.
Brew it, ain't nothing to it. Since my baby left this town, ain't got no rest in my slumber. Don't have no winners to lose. I even lost all my telephone numbers. I ain't got nothing but the blues. Low down, dirty blues, baby.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about the quagmire that we're in. And it is right before our eyes. We're not hearing very much in the way of discussion about how undemocratic the Democratic Party has become, this business that it's doing with its delegates. And the way it is basically nullifying the popular vote. It seems to me that this is a matter of constitutional challenge, that the votes of the people are being nullified by the party, and the beneficiary of that is Hillary Clinton. And we're not hearing very much about the fact that she is comfortable with the idea of having, although she's losing, she is nonetheless leading in the delegate count unfairly and wrongly and, in, to my mind, illegally. And therefore, we could say that we're seeing in the making a rigged election. What are your thoughts? I'm particularly interested in what you see as the way to go forward from here. What are you expecting should happen that takes us beyond the election moment and this particular matter, but the particular matter of the delegates and the irregularities occurring here, giving us a message again, yet another message as to what we ought to do to recalibrate ourselves. We're in trouble. You will notice in our election year, this election cycle, we have no real place to go. The third party effort is very discouraging because they too have written off communities. They're not acting like they want to win anything. They're not acting like you ought to know the message that they have or that they even have a message. They're not acting like they're hungry to win something. They're hungry about challenging this thing and that they understand it to be a fight. And therefore, they should rally the troops. They should get to know these communities, and they should get their messages out. They're not doing that work. They expect that somewhere, you know, you will experience on your own a great political epiphany, and you will gravitate toward them. No. We are stuck again with the duopoly. You're either Republican or you're Democrat or you're something else. Well, what are you in this election cycle? You see what's going on. Does it not bother you? And if it does, what do you see as a solution? We talk all the time about the problems. Let's talk about the solution. What is the solution to this? How do we put an end to putting up with this? This is crazy. Now, you hear all the time about the United States condemning other countries about, you know, voter fraud and voter irregularities and whatnot as if they're above it all. But look, it's happening in front of your face. But they call it part of the process, and they call it delegates. And it's been sanctified and codified. But to my mind, this stands right in the face of the concept of one person, one vote. What are you prepared to do? Reggie from New York, you get to start.
Oh, hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm okay. Tell me your thoughts.
My thoughts are, as many times, the great alternate Maddox has called for us organize a Freedom Party. This Freedom Party starts off just like Bernie Sanders, anyone else that don't get any press at all, and before you know it, now everybody understands, and now he's in the press. So can the Freedom Party do the same thing? The people will understand once you start from basics and uplift yourself to the point where people respect you. And just as you said, the Democratic Party has to be put to rest. All right. Now, he called for a black political convention in the country. He just put the blueprint out there for us as people to go do that, like he did in 1972 with the convention there in Indiana. Well, the black people here in this country, which has never had a party that represented them, and why is it that we can't see that we have to do what we have to do for ourselves? Hillary has never in her life represented us. She was a senator of New York. We had a Sean Bell, 50 gunshot. Never heard a word from her. We had Eric Garner. She maybe called the NAACP and made a comment so she can go on record that, I spoke about Eric Garner. But the thing is, why is it that no one is really listening to the only voice in this country, which is Auction Maddox, that's giving us the answers? I just like to end with tonight, we have a weekly forum. He will be coming down to speak in Brooklyn at 1061 Atlantic Avenue. Right after he finished speaking, we will probably play the same tape that you just spoke on, because our subject with a lot of young people on a panel discussion, we'll be talking about why do we need a Freedom Party. And as the people who are older, it appears that you're not ready to do anything. So I'm crying out to the young, take the mantle and make this party come alive. We have to do something. And that's my take for today.
Thank you very much, Reggie, for your call today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. We're talking about what are the possible solutions to the current political dilemma that we have, especially with the very undemocratic Democratic Party. Clarence from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, how are you, my dear sister?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Listen, we have first identify the fact that we are in worse condition than we were when Dr. King, Adam Clayton Powell, was amongst us. Adam Clayton Powell was a legislator in Congress, the first and last congressman Harlem ever had. His successor ended up being nothing more than a political plantation overseer. Like you said earlier, Harlem is now called Upper West Side. And it has become increasingly clear that black people never bothered to identify the real issue affecting them right here in New York. We have lost the oldest black media, as far as radio station, WWRL, was sold. I didn't hear a word from Bob Law. Used to be in there forever with Night Talk. Not a mumbling word when he took him off the air, and eventually now the station has been sold. Not a mumbling word from Brother Law. We're talking about black people who should be in the know. They are clueless, rendering them to be useless. So we have to now become very clear that unless we are cognizant of the fact that we've been sold out big time and that Hillary is not have nothing for us except more doom and gloom, setting us up for the final solution, we are about, if we have not already entered the abyss of our third Holocaust, and we have to thank these clueless leaders, misleaders, have nothing but carrying out the words of their slave masters or their charge master to make sure that we remain deaf, dumb, some dumber and blind, and we have been rendered like dry bones in the valley. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your call. From Brooklyn, Brooklyn is leading the roost today. David, you're on the air.
Yes, Chatrice, how are you?
Fine, thank you. What are your thoughts today on the subject?
The last caller was good. My thoughts are, it's unfortunate that most of the country doesn't know what we know. Otherwise, there might be a voting boycott. That's my solution.
What would that achieve, in your view?
That the people are disgusted with what's going on, because everything's rigged, and we're tired of it.
What are you inclined to do this year? With respect to what you just said, you're inclined
voting.
To do that? You're inclined to not to vote?
Oh, I haven't been for years because everything's rigged. I knew it was rigged when they put Sarah Palin along with McCain. And then the second time around, they put Paul Ryan, who wants to kill Social Security and Medicare, they put him with Romney. So the fix was in there, too.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much for your call today, David. From New Jersey, Lewis, you're on the air.
Hi, Lucretius. It's good to talk to you again.
Thank you.
I have no response and no ideas for what to do. If I were younger, I'd probably move to another country. But I did want to bring up a name that you have omitted, or at least you've omitted while I've been listening, which is almost every day. And that's the name of Dr. Lonnie Guinier and the high-handed treatment she received when, after Hillary's husband, Bill, nominated her to be the head of the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department. She ran into a lot of, well, she didn't run into a lot of opposition. She ran into opposition from some of the most reactionary Republicans, and the Clintons dropped her like a hot potato. And
I remember that, Lonnie Guinier, very much so, a very, very well thought of and esteemed legal scholar.
Yes.
But the treatment was also given to many people who thought they had been close to the Clintons, and they were jettisoned.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for your call today. South
okay,
Carolina,
so it's good to talk to you.
Khalil, you're on the air, Khalil, South Carolina, where the hotbed is.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Your thoughts
good.
Today?
Pardon me?
Your thoughts on the subject today?
My thoughts are for people who are intuitive or maybe even not. It's obvious that we are as a country at a turning point right now. The Republican Party has disintegrated, and the Democratic Party is just full of corporatists. And this nonsense with the Electoral College and the superdelegates, one solution that I have, I always complain, but I think MoveOn.org does a very good job. And people who have email, when people will send you an email if you subscribe to MoveOn.org, because we have to get petitions sent to the DNC to let them know that we want a straight election. We want to be represented. We don't want proxies, because this is nonsense. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, she has to go. She is just a corporatist. She's been taking money. And you see, now is the time. For some reason, Scalia just disappeared. And I'm going to tell you, the three worst people over the past probably 100 years, maybe not 100, let's say 75, were George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, and Antonin Scalia, because they changed the course of the world, not just the United States. You know, they changed the course of the world, and now we have to take the world back, because there is enough for everyone in this whole world for everyone to be happy and prosperous. And we have to start now. So MoveOn.org, and we have to demand that we are represented, and this superdelegate nonsense has to go. It's simple as that. Because the Republicans, see, they're plotting. They want a constitutional convention. And when that happens, and they may get it, when that happens, everything is off the table. A lot of people don't understand that we get a whole new constitution out there. Everything changes. So we are at a precipice. So people, we got to move. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Khalil, for your call. Los Angeles, DX, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. How are
Hello.
You doing? How are you feeling?
Fine, thank you. Your thoughts
Good.
Today?
Say hello to all the PRN listeners. I had a couple of thoughts on what's going on. Everybody has heard me call in and say how I feel about the whole election process federally. I've always said it's rigged and we shouldn't be participating in it. And I agree with David about the boycott of the vote, and that's what I'll be doing with the federal vote this year. And I also take it farther and say we should boycott this whole system and stop spending our money unless it's unnecessary things. So about the superdelegates, I called in before and said I think even though Hillary doesn't deserve it, she's going to get the nomination because it's rigged And someone called after me and said, no, I think Bernie's going to do it. The cards are stacked against any kind of insurgent or any kind of populist movement. That's why the superdelegates exist. And I read a little about the superdelegates in the Democratic Party, and it was kind of put in place, I believe, in the early 80s as a response to candidacies by 72 McGovern and things like that. It's a response to quash the people's will. Having said that, though, the superdelegate count at this point, well, at a little earlier than this point, before New Hampshire in 2008, was against Barack Obama. So these delegates can switch at the end, and they should, if the will of the people in the states they represent represents something other than that they want. They should. And if the Democrats do not, if they don't switch, the Democrats are going to have hell to pay from the people. And so if Bernie can sort of do this landslide thing on Super Tuesday and get, I would say, a 5 to 10% advantage, he may have a chance for a lot of these superdelegates to switch. They can switch at any time. They don't commit really until the convention. And I think it's also being used at this point to make it look like Hillary Clinton is inevitable. So they can sit here and say those delegates in Iowa, I believe it's eight of them, are committed to Hillary Clinton. But they're not really committed yet. Until the convention.
The point is not whether they're committed or not. The point is that they already are a factor, and they have, whether they choose to exercise their commitment now or at some other point, they still have the power and authority to nullify the popular vote. This is a question.
That is true.
And that is the issue.
I believe it's being used to sort of, just like the Black Caucus, they got the Black Caucus to come out and support her. It's used as a tool to try and make everyone think, and of course the rest of the American population are not as educated as your listeners on this, so it's making them think Hillary Clinton is inevitable, she has this huge lead, you may as well just go ahead and support Hillary. And that's what it's a con game, is what it is. It's propaganda, it's a con game. So, like I said, if Bernie can do something on Super Tuesday to sort of, you know, quash that, it'll happen. But if not, if it's kind of a close vote, he'll lose. Because this is all the system trying to have its way. They don't want anybody who's going to change anything. So my final word, as I said, is we all need to just boycott this rigged, corrupt system and get these people out of here, make their system crash.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that.
Okay, thank you.
That brings us to the end of our program today. And we will continue to talk about this because it is an issue that has to be addressed, it seems to me, because it gets at the core of this question about what democracy is, whether, in fact, the people have the control of the throttle and brake of government, or whether we have to settle for these invisible hands and these invisible powers that have very, very visible impact on our lives and have all kinds of ways of nullifying what the people want done or what the people say or how the people feel. This is the very essence of the democratic society. So I thank you very much for your thoughts, and we should continue our discussion on it, because this is how we continue to create community, by sharing our thoughts, sharing our views, and making it possible for people to, you know, rethink their position or just to confirm their position. But we certainly use this forum to to inform our actions. Our thinking, hopefully, will inform our actions as well. So thank you so much for listening today. Stay tuned. Coming up next, the NDC Savings Club. You can reach me, let me know what you think of this program today, at leadstories@gmail.com. As always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
I just can't get with it. Since my baby left for this town, ain't got no house in Westchester. Don't have no Chris Craft to cruise. Sold my albums with Basie and Lester. Nothing but the blue. Low down, dirty blue.